welcome to another episode of the Retro Lovely Podcast. Today we are speaking with Vanity Stardust, one of our most recent Special Model Edition models, and someone who's been in at least dozens of our publications, but her name should be no stranger to anybody that's seen our publication or our magazine. And today we're talking to Vanity. She's in Southern California. Vanity, hello. How are you doing?
Hi. How are you?
Good. So a couple things. Let's get out of the way. You've been involved with the pinup culture for about how long now?
So I started in pinup culture probably about, don't want to age myself, but probably about 20 years.
Wow.
I've always been fascinated with old Hollywood glamour. And, I know at the time burlesque was kind of coming back and was a big theme. So I just love the glitz and glamour.
It's cool how they're like sort of interrelated, which I think is like kind of cool. That's, one sort of like gloves and feeds the other a little bit. It's really cool that way. Now, when you say you've been doing it for about 20 years, so that means you started when you're about 8. Cool. And let's talk about, cause I mean, you are our co-owner and you helped establish the Vanity Lace Photography Studio. How what was the transition? Like, how long were you into the culture and the pinup? And then what was the turning point where you like really got into it and pretty much, decided to start this as a business?
So it's funny because my husband and I have always been into the pinup culture, rockabilly culture. And for some reason, just life takes over and you get busy, you start working, and we're raising a family. And when we started to decide to start our business was probably in 2020 during the COVID shutdown.
Oh, really?
So it's interesting because
I thought it was longer
husband's
than that for some reason. It seemed to me like you guys have been around forever.
Yeah, no. So it's interesting. My husband used to do sports photography, and it was for like high school football games, right, and like local publications. And I remember during the shutdown, nobody could go anywhere. Nobody could dress up, So I remember one day I was really frustrated because I hadn't gotten dressed up and gone out. So I went to my room and I was doing my hair and makeup and I just put on all this really flashy lingerie. And I came out and I asked him like, can you please take my picture?
He's like, absolutely.
He was all about it. So he's like, absolutely.
Good man.
So it was funny. I did a couple photos with his Gretsch guitar and they came out amazing. And I was sitting there and I was like, do I post them? Do I not post them? So I ended up posting them and they got this huge reaction. And then from there, I had other girls asking how they can shoot.
I've heard that same story several times. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a chain reaction. Yeah.
It is a chain reaction. And it was funny because I started to talk to him about, what if we did do this? And what if we opened it up and actually pursued it? And he kind of had the reaction of like, not sacrificing my marriage, and I don't want things to get weird. And I had told him, no, I'm going to be right there by your side. Like,
there
this is something
there
that's going to be ours. Yeah.
And it's
awesome.
It's cool that he acknowledged the potential for that. That's kind of like good on him for, sort of recognizing the potential for, things being perceived, different ways, but that you work together. I mean, there you go. I think that really helps for your clients as well, because, and I had this discussion with somebody recently, actually the last podcast that I did, the model is also a stylist and she works with a photographer. And I said, I always commiserate with photographers that do pinup who happen to be men, because there are unfortunately many, many, many photographers who shoot models just because they want to be near girls in lingerie, right? So there's a stigma with that. There's a great leap of faith and trust if a model works with somebody, and if it's a professional studio and let's say they have a stylist that's around and the stylist remains and they happen to be a female, well, there you go. That's a great way to like kind of like combat that, that you guys are a team that way. That has to just be, you know, the thing that makes it easy for those girls to trust him because you're there. You know what I mean? That's really cool.
Of course. Of course. And, you know, people have commented of how comfortable they feel and how well we work together. And, you know, I basically will do the set design. I'll do the coaching. I help the models with their outfits and everything. Mm-hmm. But, you know, as far as my husband, Ernie, he's been very great in making people feel comfortable. Mm-hmm. We've been like all inclusive, you know, we celebrate everybody. And for me, what's most rewarding is that, you know, whenever a model shoots with us, you know, we get feedback saying that it really made them feel great and it boosted their confidence.
Yes. Yes.
And for me, that's the most rewarding.
I actually experienced that constantly in my own studio. And we had sometimes a model would come in, like we were on the second floor of a building. And I remember one shoot in particular where we're waiting for the client, and the makeup artist and I were sitting in the little room right off the stairs. And we heard this person come in, and they're coming up the stairs. And then we heard what sounded like struggled breathing, like they're hyperventilating. And we thought, oh my God, are they having a medical situation? And we came to the hallway, and the woman was there, and she just looked shell-shocked, and she started to talk about how she didn't think she could do it. She was that nervous. And, you know, then my makeup artist, I think one of the things that was kind of cool for us is that, you know, our entryway, we had a lot of photos that we had taken over the years, and there were some photos of her that were done, that were on the wall, you know, all done up and shot well and good lighting in the whole nine yards. And, you know, when she did makeup and hair, one thing that I think kind of helped some of these women feel good or feel comfortable is that she didn't dress to the nines to do your hair and makeup. You know, she typically had sweats on. She didn't have makeup on. I mean, she didn't look like a bum, but she didn't look done up. And when this woman said, I don't think I can do this, right? The makeup artist pointed to the wall to one of her photos where she looked fantastic and said, what do you think about that? And she's like, oh, she looks amazing. And she goes, that's me. Right. And she did a double take and she was like, oh my God. And she started to warm up, and then we got her started. Until the end of the session, she was thanking us because she completely had a transformation. And I don't know, you probably experienced this yourself, but, I've often said, I think healthcare, health insurance should help pay for photo sessions, because for a lot of the clients that we had, it was just good for their morale. It was good for their emotional well-being. Like, it should be subsidized, right? Do you find like we did that some of the people get actually kind of like addicted to it? Like they become like they need it every so often, like they have to go and do a shoot.
Absolutely.
I mean, you probably do it yourself. Buy. Yeah. You probably yourself.
I do.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I do. And actually just this week, I got the pleasure of meeting Chrissy from Dollhouse.
Oh.
And so I got to shoot with them, and that was an experience for me because I got to do the whole hair and makeup.
Well, they're like a tour de force. I mean, they're like a cyclone.
Absolutely.
From what I've heard. You know, you've got Chrissy herself, you've got the stylist. I mean, how many people are on her team and her crew when she's traveling like that? Is it three total? Is it two? What's the number?
So I'm not sure. I think sometimes it's three, but this time it was two. It was Chrissy and her stylist. And you know, when you say healthcare should pay for should pay for photo shoots, I totally agree. Doing a big shoot like that for me was just,
right?
It just really made me feel great.
Now, when you shoot with them, because I have spoken to several people that I know, former clients of mine, and just people in general who have shot with them, they talk about it in a way where it's an experience. It's not just a photo shoot. It's something else. There's something else that actually occurs. Like I know, they do something so right that they've got a fan club of former clients that I have not experienced hardly at all. Like I can't say that I've ever experienced another studio that sort of, you know, fosters the sort of devotion that their clients that have worked with them have. Like it seems like there's some magic that happens.
Absolutely. I think with Dollhouse, because, you know, everybody has their different style of photography, mm-hmm. but with Dollhouse, they have that extra layer of like
right.
the digital photography where yep. it's like an art piece.
Exactly.
And I think that stands out about them.
Yeah. And they were really at the forefront of that. Like I've seen in recent months, some other studios that seem to be, you know, sort of like doing work of a similar caliber in a similar vein. But it's taken quite a while before there's been really anything that I've seen that that really kind of has that same sort of caliber that they've had.
We got to sit around and kind of share our retro lovely stories, submissions and photo shoots and stuff. So that was really nice connecting with another studio. And I think in the future, I would like to maybe reach out to some of our other partner studios and shoot with them just to hear their stories and stuff.
We've seen that several times. I've seen that sort of like cross-pollination where you have the studios that have the female shooter. They want to get shot as well. And they'll if they're visiting someplace. Like I've even had, it was probably three or so years ago, Dynamite Dames came up from Texas to my studio. They actually stayed here, uh-huh. and it was the stylist was Charlie Girl at the time. So while they were here, we actually co-shot about a dozen you know clients, and then I had the opportunity to shoot Charlie Girl herself. You know, after the smoke cleared, like just before we're like all ready to pass out, and it's mm-hmm. it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun, and it is definitely a bonding experience. And you learn things.
Absolutely.
You know, people approach things differently. As far as how they might approach lighting, you know, what they do with posing. There's everybody has a signature, and it's good to experience and be around somebody else's flow. And I'm not saying that you like copy them verbatim, but it can give you an idea. It can give you a different insight into something, which is just good to have in your toolkit. So.
Absolutely. And you know, just as far as like sharing stories and our experiences and mm-hmm. Just, you know, our love for retro pinup, you
yep.
know?
Yep. No, that's cool. That's very cool. Has there been anyone else that you've worked with like that? I'm trying to think. I've really mainly seen your work through your studio. And now I know I might end up seeing some from Dollhouse. Has there been anybody else that you've worked with?
No, not recently.
Okay.
So pretty much it's just been all vanity lace. So my husband does all of my photo shoots mm-hmm. and I just wanted to experience, you know, what it would be like to shoot with Dollhouse. But, you know, I'm open to shooting with other studios as well. Mm-hmm. But now that like Halloween is kind of coming up, I'm really excited.
You know,
I'm really excited and we're thinking about what we're going to do as far as photo shoots. Before, we're really prepping for it.
But just for the listeners, before we actually got started, we got on the phone and had a couple minutes of testing out the levels and just, you know, saying hello. Halloween came up, and I know mm-hmm. Halloween is huge for you. I've always seen tons of stuff coming out of your studio and tons for you personally. And I know you're, okay, so again, remind me, you're involved in a capacity of organizing events with a theme park in California, mostly Halloween related. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Straighten me out there again. Yeah.
Yeah. So normally during Halloween, in my real life, real time job, I am a human resources director. So I kind of feel like I live a little bit of a double life, being corporate HR during the day and then, you know, being pinup model Halloween enthusiast by night. But normally, probably like in June, I get started with Halloween and I work with a big theme park out here. And I would cast and direct and manage either a scare zone or a maze. And it is the most fun job in the world.
Awesome.
It's basically Halloween every day from June until beginning of November.
Oh, that's perfect. That is so awesome. I mean, clearly anybody that's followed Retro Lovely knows that Halloween has become sort of like, it almost feels like we invented Halloween pinup with the sheer volume of content that we pulled together for the season. And I forget when it occurred, but we actually now start at the beginning of October. Like we consider Halloween to be a month. It's a month of October, and there's still spillover because even though the holiday comes and goes, I'll still see Halloween submissions for like the next 2 weeks, you know, into November.
Oh, so there's so much you can shoot with Halloween.
Yeah,
I believe it's your biggest issue, right?
Yeah, I think last year it was like 40 some volumes. And then if you want to think about it for 2023, we did Halloween in April. We did that. What is the name of that holiday? It's a German holiday. It's basically like, it's like in between Halloween. It's like halfway to Halloween. And we did Halloween in April, and there was 4 or 5 volumes then. Like it just doesn't stop. And
it doesn't stop.
Before we got on the phone, I said to Vanity that as far as I'm concerned, Halloween is that month of the year that's held hostage by the other 11 months that get in the way. You know, it's so I'm thrilled to hear that you get to enjoy it from June to November. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's really cool. And you know, to be honest, I know today is a rainy day in Southern California, but first thing I did when I woke up this morning was hit the stores and see what was out there as far as Halloween decorations.
How about that? That is so cool. Yeah. Now, you just mentioned getting up on the rainy day. You guys are like on the alert for some serious meteorological things going on there. You have a hurricane. Is it Hillary they're calling it?
Yeah, Tropical Storm Hillary.
Tropical Storm, okay.
It's interesting, too, because, you know, we went grocery shopping yesterday and everyone's panic buying, like toilet paper and water is gone again.
Oh my God.
You know?
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy. And it hasn't been too bad so far, but I heard from 3 p.m. today until 3 in the morning is probably when we're going to get the most rain.
Well, I hope it's not bad. I hope you guys weather the storm well. And, you know, I just have to say, I think after COVID, I find it shocking that every home in the nation doesn't have at least a month's supply of toilet paper and paper towels sitting around.
I know.
I do. Like right next to my refrigerator, there are cartons and cartons of toilet paper and paper towels. I'm good for the next pandemic. I'm ready. I mean, I got to stock up on water, but I got the toilet paper covered. That's never going to be a problem again.
Absolutely. I think we all should have learned from the first time.
Yeah. Like, I've been thinking about that. Like after that, like there got to be like a stockpile in everybody's homes that's, you know, unparalleled through our history.
Absolutely. It was that first time during the shutdown. That was insane. Not being able to find toilet paper or water or like just bare necessities. That was insane. And I think now to see it again is like, wow, for sure. I have to get my extra stock.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, when I was growing up, my mother and father were, they had me later in life. Like I have two brothers that were 15 years older than me, right? And I'm already old. So my parents were actually born in the 20s and they grew up through the Depression and they remember the Depression.
Oh, wow.
And when you live in a household with anybody that lived through the Depression, you don't waste anything and you save everything. And that's, I've grown up with that. So that's kind of been my thing. So, you know, this wasn't like, I got the benefit of them having lived through something cataclysmic like that. So it's not as shocking as, let's say, younger generations where everything's always available at all times. You know, everything's 24/7 and you can get whatever you need tomorrow. So, I think it was a wake up call. I think it was something that probably had some benefits, like, you know, to get people to think in terms of like, yeah, you know what? Things are not guaranteed. I'm not guaranteed that I can go to a restaurant or that I can go to the market or that I can get a service. Like, I think it was a nice little wake up call and hopefully it doesn't get forgotten.
It was a huge wake up call. I think that we're so used to getting everything Amazon Prime next day, you know, and realistically, you know, we have to prepare for what if one day you can't receive it next day?
It might seem ironic and it might seem trivial, like a first world problem, but that very thing of the expectation of anything we want when we want it has largely led to the changes that I made with the publications as far as how I handle submissions. You know, some of the biggest things that I'd hear in the past, like if I would talk to anybody or even just see people talking, you know, online, if somebody was talking about a magazine that they submitted work to and they didn't get any response and it's been 2 months, or they waited for, you know, 2 weeks till they heard anything. And it always struck me that that was like a big opportunity to do better. And actually, just as the pandemic was getting started, I made some changes. And one of the big things that I basically committed to was submissions get turned around lightning fast. Like they come in.
They absolutely do.
And I'm on them, like, because I get notifications. I mean, I do work from home. I do this full time. And I'll get a notification. Hey, there's a new submission. I check it immediately. I think most people, if it's during, you know, business hours, which is for me on the East Coast, from about 4 a.m. till about 8 p.m. And I'll check them from my phone. I'll check them from a laptop. Doesn't matter where I'm at. I check them as soon as possible. And I think statistically in the past 2 years, there hasn't been any submissions that haven't gotten a reply within 24 hours, and most of them within minutes. You know, sometimes they're that fast that I've been accused of having like an automated that I just accept everything. You know, like, oh, they just accept everything, because how could they possibly look at it and I get a reply before my email feels like it left my outbox, right? And it's just because I know it's important to people. I know it's important to get that answer right away. So that's been a big thing.
Yeah, you have definitely set the standard. I can say that we have submitted to other publications and for probably a month, 2 months, we get no response. Yeah. We don't know if they've received our submission, if they've accepted our submission.
You're in limbo.
And you're kind of in limbo, and then you're like, well, it was a good set. I don't know if I should withdraw it and submit it somewhere else. And so that part is a little frustrating, mm-hmm. especially when we've worked with Retro Lovely so often, to where we receive a reply that the very same day, whether a submission was accepted or not. And we basically know the timeline of when the magazine will be released. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you definitely set the standard, and other publications definitely have their work cut out for them.
Well, you know, and it really comes back to 99% of them, it's a side hustle for somebody. It's the thing they do in addition to their studio or whatever the case may be. 99% are just somebody's side hustle, and that's not the case here. And I think some of the things that I get frustrated by, or that I wish could be better, okay? The entire process, that entire thing of getting those replies, it's almost like, I don't want to use the word cancer, but it's just like a self-feeding cyclone. It's like a snowball. So what's happened mm-hmm. is, because people do know that if they submit with us, they'll get an answer right away, it's become a situation where we become their first choice to submit. And it's expanded. Like, I can't tell you how many times I'll get a submission, either from a new model or a new photographer, and I've never seen their work before, I've never seen their name before, and the submission comes in, and I look at it, and I either approve it or I decline it. And if it's approved, so often I've seen this thing occur where they almost feel like, oh my God, I got so much work I want to send them now. Like, I'll have like this window after somebody's first submission where they will bombard me, and I'll get, you know, 8, 10, like sometimes all in the same day. Like there's been a few instances where I had to like email some people and say, we can't keep up with all your submissions and everybody else's. We're going to ask you to limit yourself to 10 a day, just because they're so excited about getting that, you know, confirmation and getting the feedback that it's accepted or not. So what that's done is means that it's gotten so busy that there's lots of things that I can't do. Like I can't, I really can't talk to people about why we decline something. Okay. Because unfortunately, it's never just an easy discussion. It's never just, well, you did this or this. Because usually what will happen is they'll want to have a conversation about it. They'll want to know detail. They'll want us to spend hours with them showing them what they didn't do right. And that's just not possible. You know, it's just not possible.
No,
so you know, I get upset that we can't do that. I get upset that, I mean, when it comes right down to it, it used to be in the old days that the actual publications that there was time to actually do a lot more with layouts. There was more time to actually do artistic things. And now, I mean, we still spend time on the covers, of course, but the meat of the publications are displaying the images. Okay, there's not a lot of like multiple images together and woven together. Like I remember in the old days, you know, I would spend time and sometimes there would be like, you know, a main image crossing two pages, and then another one would be inset on the thing, but then the model would also be sort of like on top of that image. Like there's a lot of things that used to get done that were artistic that we just don't have the time for. And, you know, there's a couple other publications out there that I really admire because they still spend that time on the layouts. I just can't afford to do that. I just don't have that time. If I did, then what will happen is things will break down as far as getting submissions taken care of quickly, of maintaining, getting out almost an issue a day. Like I think last year was like 400. This year has backed off a little bit. Like I think right now we're hovering around 250. And if I look at the trends over the past few years, of course October is going to explode. October, November, December are pretty big months. So I figure there's going to be like another 200 issues between those 3 months. So this will get me up, you know, past an issue a day. So I think we'll make it again, which just blows my mind. But in order to be able to handle all that, it means that there's other things that we can't do. So, you know, and that's one of them. And I kind of get like bummed out sometimes, but it is what it is. There are other avenues for people to get that sort of like, you know, if they want their work presented that way, there are some titles that'll do that. But
I can imagine the sheer volume that you deal with, but I think that Retro Lovely has also done a very good job of presenting many different themes.
I'll tell you what, that we've been able to have like all these new and different titles that sort of are tailored to different sorts of things. Should have done that like years ago, having the special editions with the themes, of course, but then other titles, like it's not just pinup anymore. We've got Godiva and Cassandra, which handle more, you know, beauty and boudoir and things like that. We have Venus Cult, which is like alt. The different titles have made it a lot easier to find somebody a home. And this is something that I think goes lost on a lot of people, that there's a lot of work that's submitted to Retro Lovely that doesn't get accepted for Retro Lovely. I think it's probably less than 50%. But what would happen in the old days was that it would basically be people would be declined. I'd say, no, we can't put this in Retro Lovely. Now we have other titles that we will include it in that are still pinup. And really what it boils down to is, you know, you get a lot of people, they'll do work, and while it might be good, it falls short of excellent. So, you know, Cat Club, Mod Squad, they can take the work that's good, that's fun, but still falls short of excellent. So, you know, I don't have to say no as much, which is kind of like, kind of cool. You know, there's a lot less disappointing people with a no. It's just, well, yeah, you know, I can't put it in Retro Lovely, but be happy to put it in Cat Club. You know, so that's been huge. That's been huge.
Or Masquerade for cosplay.
Yeah. Yeah. That's been a lot of fun. I know that's a huge market. I wish I could get in front of more people because I think there's like an entire whole ocean of people out there that don't realize that it exists. Like, I don't know how to get in front of them. You know, it's one of those things where it's like ironic that I thought that thing probably would have exploded given the, you know, the conventions and the people that get into that and all the, you know, the effort that they put into creating costumes and everything. I thought
it's,
you know,
a whole lifestyle.
I mean, it's still monthly, but I thought it would be even more than that. I'm not complaining. Yeah, I'm not complaining. Yeah. Well, speaking
of cosplay is a whole lifestyle and people live it year round. And I think it's really cool that you have a publication dedicated to it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And same with alternative models. I mean, Venus Cult and mm-hmm. Hellfire Club, those are some of my favorites. Those are beautiful images.
Yeah, Hellfire artistic. Club, I'm really, really happy about because right off the bat, it's almost no holds barred, right? So there can be nudity, mm-hmm. there could be like fetishy stuff, but the trick is that we announce that that's what it is. We're telling you. You know, if that stuff's offensive to you, don't even check it out. Okay, that's not for you. It's for other artists who that's where their jams are. That's what they like to do. So, you know, I love that it's compartmentalized like that. That's my cat in the background, if you can hear her. I warned you, and she's very needy today, so I apologize for her. But
she's like, pay attention to me
all the time. So you mentioned costumes, and I'm pretty sure in your special edition you mentioned making your own costumes. I mean, as it relates to Halloween, is that the extent of it? Is it just Halloween, or do you other stuff too? Do you actually do cosplay costuming yourself?
I do a little cosplay, and it's funny because the way I started making my own costumes. So, my parents are very traditional Mexican family, and I don't think they really understand Halloween. So even really? When I was young,
that's strange to me, because it seems like the Mexican Latino cultures are, I don't know, maybe I'm imagining this, but it seems like they're big into that. Am I wrong?
You know, you would think so, but my mom she just never really was about Halloween. And so when I was little, I used to steal her clothes out of her closet and make my own costumes.
Oh, get
and
out.
I used to do it all the time.
See, that's pretty stuff. Cool.
Yeah. So I kind of grew up like that. Like I just would make my own costumes. And like, if I was home, even when I was like 5 years old, I would like just find jewelry and I would walk around in weird little outfits, you know, and my mom thought it was a phase, but now, you know, to this day, I'm like, really? Was it a phase?
You showed her. All right.
I know. And it's funny because there's a portion of my house that is decorated Halloween all year round.
Perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think my mom has really embraced it because she has had those conversations with me of how creative I am.
And, that's good. That's good.
How funny it is that I just loved it so much. So yeah, I enjoy making my own costumes. And I have a lot of creative friends who are makeup artists, drag queens, burlesque performers. And I just feel like I have the best group of friends around me. Just everybody is so creative.
You've got a culture that allows your little petri dish to grow. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, absolutely. I can let my freak flag fly.
Excellent. Yeah, when I was talking to you guys, when you became a partner studio, I know at the point that I learned Ernie was a musician and a guitar player, we just had conversations because I'm into that too. And when you talk about like Halloween, when I was, let's see, back in the 90s, okay, because I'm old, one of the musical acts that I had was like a goth industrial thing. And the thing for me was musically, a lot of that stuff always felt like horror movie soundtracks, or, you know, the stuff that would be like perfect for the Halloween season. Like that music was like the equivalent of dressing up in a costume because we often did. I mean, a lot of the stuff that we did, when we did our performances was bizarre, sometimes fetishy, like just, you know, it looked like you were ready to go to, a comic con as a cosplayer, you know, for Halloween.
That's the best club scene type, industrial goth. I grew up like that as well too.
Yeah. The imagery and I think one of the other things that like was part of that whole process for me was that I grew up in a Roman Catholic family and, you know, I didn't go to a Catholic school for education, but we did have CCD classes. We did have to go to like, you know, after you got done your public school day once a week, you'd have to go to the local church where they had, you know, the nuns. They had like a school that was part of the Catholic school and you would go there for a couple hours to get your dose of religious training. And the thing about it was, a lot of the imagery, the iconography, the dogma, all that stuff leaves an impression. And when they're like, you know, teaching you about all this stuff and the mysticism, it takes on an aura and it kind of sticks with you. And the look is part of that fabric. And it's amazing to me, like how often, and I don't want it to disappoint anybody who is like, you know, profoundly religious, because a lot of them can think of this stuff as being like blasphemous, but you know, you have a lot of like religious imagery that finds its way into those genres. And, you know, I think that was part of it too. You know, like being, you know, growing up that way, having that as part of your, you know, your background.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what, as far as the fashion and the fashion and the imagery and like the crosses, I mean, it's definitely, I know, we're redesigning my dining room right now, and it's total like goth, like a goth dining room.
You have an altar? Is that what you're saying? There's an altar there? Well, you know, it was funny one time with my band, I was doing a show and I had this gorgeous crucifix that I used to wear. And at the time I was sort of identifying as agnostic. I had an atheist phase, uh-huh. But then I realized, well, you know what? I can't really say either way. I just don't know. So I guess agnostic makes sense. But one of my friends saw the crucifix and he's like, wow. He's like, you weren't a cross. He's like, I thought you were like an atheist or something. I said, well, no, but I said, it looks amazing, doesn't it? I was like, it just looks fantastic. I love these. Like, yeah. You know, that, I said, I like the way a swastika actually looks too, but that's been tainted by that guy in Germany. So I can't wear those.
Right.
That's out. even though you see, like, I've got this great little Buddha statue, and I guess it's like three sided. So on the one side, it's, I forget which specific religion it is, but they're one of the ones that actually use a reverse facing swastika as one of their symbols. And uh-huh. You know, well, I've been in so many places around here where you know, places that were built in the 20s or 30s, and you would see them as part of the artwork in like the entryway of a building because it was like an Indian good luck symbol or this or that. Like, you know, that guy in Germany just destroyed that thing. So, you know, you can't yeah. wear them. And I totally get it. I even get like, I still like the iron crosses that you see in like the biker culture. But more and more, I think a lot of people are also associating that with those people that did that nasty stuff. So
Yeah, of course. You do have to be sensitive to it. You know, but of course it's a part of history, and there's people who collect memorabilia, and it doesn't necessarily mean anything negative, but there is like a negative association with some of that stuff, you know?
Yeah. And it's, you know, and there are definitely times where I think some of the people that collect those things, I think there is subtext and I think there is signaling, and that's the thing that makes it really dicey, you know? It's one of those things like, well, what do you really mean? Like, is this just like a tongue in cheek sort of thing that you're like really saying this one thing, but you're hiding behind the fact that you're, you know, remembering history? It's such a complicated world.
Yeah.
But anyway,
away
from political stuff like that, let's get back to some pinup type stuff. So with your studio, I'm curious, like, I know you're present, you know, when you're working on the shoots themselves, what typically is the, like when you do sessions, is it typically a model one-on-one? Do you have days where you have several models come at the same time and have like, you know, different, like a schedule where it's, you know, several models over the course of a weekend? What's the typical sessions like for Vanity Stardust?
So we have a combination of the two, and I definitely prefer a model one-on-one because I kind of feel like we get the best shoots.
Yep. Yep.
We get the most out of the model, and it's more personalized, and we're able to like just really capture a good image. But we also have models that really only feel comfortable if they're shooting with their friend.
That makes sense. I've had that too.
Yeah. So sometimes we may shoot like three or four models in one day, and that gets a little hectic just because now there's a time crunch or maybe other model starts chiming in with input.
Yes. Yes. Well, I'll tell you, I've done some things on locations where the locations are so just to die for that we've done, you know, weekends where we have like a dozen models, like six a day. And it is pushing the parameters because you do have a level of energy, and if it gets sapped away from you, you know, you start to like losing your edge by that last session, and you don't want to do that. You don't want to do that with anybody. And the other thing too is on a lot of those days, scheduling is so important, and
of course,
there's nothing more frustrating than giving somebody a set time and saying, please be here 15 minutes early. and they show up 15 minutes late. And
oh yeah,
especially if it's early on, like if it was the last client, big deal. But if it's like the second one, they just really dramatically changed the dynamic. And we had a couple instances where people were inconsiderate enough that we made it very clear on those days, on those types of shoots, that if you miss your appointment time, we don't realign the people after you. You simply lose some shooting time. So if you're 15 minutes late and you had an hour to shoot, you're now going to have 45 minutes. We will not penalize the person that you know respected the schedule after you. You know, I think in some cases it helped people learn that they, you know, that they're not the center of the universe. And I mean, it's a shame to say that, but you experience it a lot with this kind of thing. And I'm thinking in terms of as a photographer, but then also with the magazines. I've really lost a lot of faith in people over the past couple of years when it comes to things that they'll do with regards to, you know, our process in the publication. That's why I try and hide out. It's why I try not to be directly available to anybody. Just submit it and then you'll get the email and good to go. Don't email me. We don't have to have a conversation.
I can only imagine if you were available for everybody, how many phone calls and emails we get.
It gets ridiculous. Not only does it get ridiculous, but I don't know if people think that the idea that they had to try and like pull one over on us, that nobody else ever had that same idea, or that we haven't thought of it ourselves and can't see it coming from like a mile away. But yeah, they continue to try. I mean, like, you know, one thing recently that's been sort of notable to me is we, of course, with our submission form, we like to thank people that help us, that support us with some purchases. And we ask for selfies. You know, if you've been in issues, mm-hmm. take some selfies with those things. We want to see them. And it helps us when we're putting together our publications, say, like, you know, like let's say we have a ton of submissions for a particular special edition. And we're at the point where space is limited, or we have just enough to do, let's say, 5 volumes at 60 pages. Well, if there's like a couple extra submissions that really push the number higher as far as the number of people in a particular issue, that means some of them are going to get a lower page count. So what we try and do is when somebody has been in our publications and they send the selfies and they show us that they're, you know, they're picking up a couple, you know, a copy here and there, we appreciate that. And what we do then is we'll look at those and say, okay, well, here's 5 people that submitted for this thing and they have helped us over the past few years. They've made some purchases. They've helped us. They definitely get at least, you know, a 2-page. Well, everybody gets 2 pages, but you know, they at least get 4. And if we can get them 6, we'll get them 6. But the days can come where space is limited and we have to like kind of like trim it back. Well, you know, we've done this for long enough and we promote it. You know, we love when we can give somebody a cover who's been in an issue and they have the selfie. We try and promote that as much as possible. There's been enough people that have sort of like figured it out that it's important to us, but they like to be deceptive with the selfies. I can't tell you how many terrible Photoshops I've gotten where it's like a model and a terrible, you know, terrible quality and a very poorly cut out magazine cover that they got online pretending to hold it.
No.
I wish I could share them with the world to show how ridiculous they are. And it's just so demoralizing when I see it. It's like, really? Really? Don't even bother.
Yeah,
don't
people
even bother.
Trying to pull a fast one.
Yeah. It's like, don't do that. Don't do that. But anyway.
Yeah, that's horrible. I'm very proud of all my publications and I pick up a copy every single time.
Well, you know, one of the reasons we're talking, one of the reasons we've done this special edition with you is because we've noticed that. We've seen your impressive collection. And it's the sort of thing where when we get to that point and we see stuff like that, in addition to, like, I actually need to reach out to a model. She's on the cover of a magazine probably 3 or 4 weeks ago. And just the other day, I was looking at some sales statistics and I saw that particular issue and somebody had made a purchase of 10 copies. And I said to myself, I'll bet that was that model, you know, that's on the cover of that one. So now what I'm going to do is I want to double back. find her email, ask her, do you live in this town? Because here's the thing with the printer, they don't tell us who bought them. They'll tell us how many and the date and the city that the order came from. So some of the earliest, the very, very first special model edition that we did 2 years ago was with that Miss Jenna Purrs from out there. And she was one of those situations where I started to notice, like, after she was, you know, in an issue, there'd be like sales for multiple copies. And then if she's on the cover, there'd be like 10, 15 copies being sold at a time. And she was buying them and she was reselling them. So when I saw that enough, I emailed her and said, is this you? Do you live in this town? Are you buying these? And she was like, yes. And I said, okay, so you're doing work. You're doing promotional efforts. You're selling these things. You're obviously marketing them up, making some money. Thank you very much. And I think she ended up doing like a calendar. Like she's going to do her fourth calendar for 4 years straight. She's doing a calendar with us. And, you know, when I had seen her efforts, her energy with this and her drive and seeing that she was getting results and she did the calendar, that's when I finally made the decision. I said, I have to say thank you somehow. I have to do something to say thank you to acknowledge that great work and to do something in kind, right? And that's when we did our first special model edition since we relaunched. And the whole idea for the people listening who, you know, they've heard us talk about special model edition, and maybe they didn't listen to the other podcasts where I talk about it ad nauseum. What we do with these is when we recognize and identify models who are good partners, who do work, who don't just come with their hand out or sending us shitty Photoshops, okay? We like to say thank you. And the special model editions we produce with the models. So in the case of Vanity, she pulled together the art and we put together the issue. And then when everything was finalized, we gave her the actual printer files that she and her team uploaded to the printer's website. And they are now available for you to purchase, and you should. And the thing about it is, we got behind it. We did that work. We gave her the files, but we make no money on them. We make not a single penny. Okay. We, there was no fee. There was no cost for her to get this done. We did it because she did a bunch of work ahead of this point. Didn't ask for help. Didn't ask for special treatment. She did the work. She tried to do, you know, what she could with this. And this is where we say thank you. So, with this podcast, there will be information on how to contact Vanity and how to get a signed copy, which you should, or even just a copy, you know, to get it in the mail. There's posters available too. The thing you have to remember is with all of this art that you see, the models that are posting this work, or even the photographers that post the work, it's by and large the models that foot the bill. They pay for the wardrobe most of them do. They pay for the hair and makeup and the shoots themselves, travel. They invest a ton of money. And there's hardly any place where they can get anything back. So the special editions, it's not going to be something they can, you know, quit their day job with. It's not something that they can buy a car. But very often, it is something that will help them make a couple car payments. It's something that will help offset some of the investment that they've made all along with these shoots. So if you're listening, if you're a fan of the artwork, the special model editions are very important to us because the models make the money. So at the end of this thing, click that link, get one of Vanity's issues. It's a great collection. There's a lot of variety. I really like too how there's like you almost go through the seasons. There's like there's the spring. There's Easter. There's Valentine's Day. There's Halloween. There's Halloween. There's Halloween. There's Halloween. There's some Christmas.
Yeah,
it really covers all the seasons. Like it's a really great best of collection. That's a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun putting it together, and I think people will really enjoy it when they get it in their hands. But
thank you, Michael. It was a great honor to receive my own model special edition.
Well, I'm really glad we finally got it all together. I mean, I know we had there's a window where things got really hectic for you and for us.
This was such an amazing opportunity for me. It's something that I didn't even think that, you know, that I would receive. So
I'll tell you, I love that,
like,
about
I said,
these
huge
things.
Confidence boost.
Love that about these. They're, you know, they're not, there's no specific flight path for somebody to get one of these things. You know, it's truly something that efforts get recognized and then we act and we offer them. you know? And I've heard that same exact thing several times from many of the models that we've done them with. Like, you know, they're hopeful maybe one day it would sort of happen, but they didn't think they were in that, you know, in that place where it made sense. But that's, you know, that's the really cool thing about them. So,
you know, and when I first saw the first issue of Retro Lovely, the issue number one with Masumi Max,
those days,
I remember flipping through that issue and being like, how do I get into this publication? Like, how is it even possible? And I remember at that time thinking it was impossible. You know, you had to be a Masumi Max or a Dita Von Teese, you know, and because Masumi was pretty big at the time.
Yeah.
And and it's really funny that now I have my own model special edition.
Let me ask the question. Where did you first see that first issue? Where was it? Somebody had one? Was it at a show? Was it, what was the circumstances that you had your hands on one of those?
It was a car show.
Okay. And was it somebody vending them, or did a model have one, or?
No, it was actually at a vendor booth at a car show. And I completely, like, I remember flipping through it and I remember being like, this is awesome. And I've seen copies of Retro Lovely, like, at antique shops.
Oh, yeah.
But I regret not buying issue number one because I can't get it anywhere now.
Well, you know, okay, so for those who are uninitiated, when Retro Lovely first started, they were a different sort of product. They were mass produced on high-end presses so that the materials, the cover stock, the page stock, the actual print spec, very high-end. Like, quite frankly, I've had some people in the print business that I know who've had a copy in their hands and say, you know, the actual pages in this are of the caliber you'd have in an art book. It just happens to be in a paperback format. And they said, it's that good, like the actual execution of the, you know, there's a lot of technical stuff that goes with getting a print really proper, because they're printing with three different colors and there's a lot that goes into it. And the printer in particular did a fantastic job. And, you know, the thing that was, you know, amazing about back then, we used to print thousands of copies. And I think with the first edition, the first run was like two or 3,000. I forget. I think it was at least two. I had like 2,000, you know, copies printed. And the thing of it was, I think they actually we got them on March 23rd in 2010, and Viva Las Vegas that year was just like a couple of days after that. And I immediately dispatched like a bunch of cartons to Mitzi and Company, who had Masumi at the booth that year, and was pretty much introduced at her booth, which was always well attended. And she's got this like kind of like rock star pinup model who's on the cover, you know, signing them and doing things at the booth. And what was really kind of like, it was very nerve-wracking too, because I didn't know how well it would be received. I mean, we had a product that cost, you know, $10. It was like 80 pages. It was $10. And magazines typically were like $4 or $5. Right. So now you have this thing that's like $10. Who in their right mind is going to give you $10 for this thing? And it was absolutely like, earth shaking. Once Viva kicked in and people were seeing it at the booth, like, I had some messages from Mitzi. She's like, yeah, people are going crazy. She's like, we're going to sell out. And the aftermath was just as interesting, because then what happened was, anybody who touched it, anybody that was like into that scene, it sort of became like the thing that you had to get in. And I mean, we had so many emails and so many people like just, you know, reaching out about submitting. And back then, it was very frustrating for models, because back then I only accepted submissions from photographers. And it was tough for models, because they couldn't understand why they couldn't submit content. But what I learned very quickly is that even though I could tell somebody the files that you submit to us need to be of a certain resolution and of a certain type, people just don't want to do any work to make sure that they're providing you with that file at that resolution of that particular type. Models just it's in and out their ear. All they know is they have a photo file that they were given. Well, I'll just submit it. Well, guess what? I wasted so much time looking at files that were so tiny that I finally decided The only way to avoid this is to deal directly with photographers who will speak that language, who will know what you mean when you say it has to be this resolution, it has to be this type of file. They understand that kind of stuff. So it just immediately shifted to just working with photographers directly, because I didn't have the patience to deal with that same routine time and time again. And, you know, then the other thing that was like kind of like problematic was that I think a lot of photographers also realized this is the vehicle that I need my work to be presented in. And there was a rush. There was a lot of people sending tons of stuff. And back then, unlike now where you can print 400 issues in a year, back then there's an economics to it where you need the money to print 4,000 copies or 5,000 copies. And you don't just have that every day. You have to sell the ones that you just got. So I think that first year we put out 4 magazines, and the next year it was like 4 or 5. So there was even less space. Like, space was such a commodity. And I even had to like caution some photographers, because they were basically page counting. Like, if I was preparing an issue and I would like give people advance proofs to look at, what would happen sometimes is I get that email. Why does so-and-so have 4 pages and I only have 2? It was a lot of work managing the egos, managing the expectations of people. And, it was a crazy time. And I think it was probably the last time that could actually sort of happen with something like that, because within 3 short years, smartphones and social media changed everything. People didn't need magazines anymore. Like, you know, I can't tell you how many times I've like talked to somebody, like a girl who cuts my hair. She was at a salon for a while working. And one day we're talking and she asked me, you know, how's everything going? And I'm like, you know, it's okay. And I said, people just don't buy magazines anymore. And she says, you know, it's funny, but we have that table over there in the waiting area and we have all those magazines on it. She goes, we are actually thinking about just getting rid of them and putting in charging ports for their smartphones, because when they come in and they're waiting for their appointment, they're just on their phone. They don't ever pick up those magazines anymore. And that's true for so many things. And magazines are like a dying thing. It is what it is. But, you know, I think we've finally gotten into that point where people are sort of looking at them as keepsakes sort of things. Like what you said, you know, how you pick up copies. Cause here's the thing. How many times you print your photos? How many prints do you ever get made of all the shoots that you've ever done?
Hardly ever.
Right. And here's the thing. They're on your phone. They're trapped on your phone. It's the sort of thing where it is still kind of cool to have this piece of paper printed decently with those photos. And it's a lot easier to pull them out than to try and find them on the albums in your phone from 2 years ago or 3 years ago. And even on social media, like, unless you're going to like start reposting everything, you know, things that you did 3 years ago are buried in your feed. Like they're so far out of mind that, you know, what it's transient. It's like now and then it's going to be gone. So these still have that effect.
Well, I'm a collector.
I'm with you. I'm with you there.
I'm a collector. If I see somebody's, that has a beautiful art piece, I like to buy a print and I like to display it on my wall. Mm-hmm. I'm the type of person that will buy an art print and I will buy a beautiful frame for it and I will display it. And as far as me, I love paper. I love holding things. My husband gets really mad because he's like, oh my God, you and paper. But I love...
Okay, so let me ask you this. Has he gotten back into phonograph records? Has he gotten back into albums yet?
Yeah.
So that's where I've been. Like even right now, like I'm working on some things and the people that I'm working with, we're approaching finally having like an album's worth of material. And it's funny, it was like, when I was a kid, like CDs didn't exist. Like it was phonograph records. And you had I still remember 8 tracks, and then cassettes came along. I always dreamt of having like music of my own on an album, on a vinyl album. And then they went away. They were gone. And they're finally like back. And it's so cool to hold it in your hands. Like, I, you know, there's something that kids today will never experience when it comes down to having a limited access to, say, art, like by way of music. Like back then we had to listen to the radio, or you had to buy an album, or you had to go to your friend's house because they got a new album, and maybe somebody made you a mixtape, right? It was a lot of work. It was a lot of work to hear stuff. And, you know, it was ceremonial. I mean, you get that new album and you just spent a lot of money on this thing, and you know, you're poring over the cover art, you're poring over the sleeve, you're looking at every excuse my French, you're looking at every word, every word that's printed in that thing for clues about these artists. And you know, there's something so like powerful in that combination of imagery and music, and then the words that they included with that thing that painted a picture. And
absolutely,
you know, that was something that I'm just thrilled that it's kind of coming back. That you're, you know, well, I've been buying albums like crazy lately, like old ones that I never really had on vinyl, and new ones that are from artists, and you know, they're back at it, and it's really heartening to see that it's really had a renaissance in the last couple of years. So maybe books and magazines will do that too at some point.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's so funny. When you see somebody actually sitting down and reading a book, it's like, what?
What kind of freakazoid are you?
Yeah. You're not looking at your phone?
Something wrong with you? Where are you from? Yeah.
No, yeah, as far as albums and the cover art and the sleeve and just being a genuine fan and listening to the music on repeat, very much like I grew up that way. My husband Ernie is very much that way. Whenever he hears a new song or discovers a new artist or even news about somebody that he just is a big fan of, like he has to know everything.
Yeah. And back then it was work, like I said, and just touching that thing. And you know, it might sound stupid, but there's something physical about vinyl in that when the artists record the music, they're in the studio, they typically record a tape, and that's still an actual magnetic representation of the things that they did in the studio. And then from there, they make the plates and things that they have to make to stamp out these vinyl things. It's actually still connected to them. You know, it's still like there's still a line from the work they did in that studio to the thing that you have on your turntable now that you're listening to. You know, it's a lot more intimate than what happened with like digital technology. Because with digital technology, if you had enough time, you could sit down with a computer keyboard and tap out zeros and ones, and it would sound like the most recent, you know, Madonna album or Katy Perry, right? You could actually create it from scratch with just zeros and ones. Whereas with analog, there's, you know what I mean? It is something that they generated either by playing an instrument or from their voices. And that's powerful. And one little tangent, I'll get off this, I swear. Something interesting that I found too is with a lot of like albums that I had when I was a kid, right? Like I actually just got a reprint of something that I had and lost. And it was an album that was with me in my teenage years. It was with me through parties that we had at my house, or I carted it to a friend's place and we played it. It was a pivotal album with my peer group. And what I noticed when I got the replacement, I'm listening to the same songs, and it's on a brand new piece of vinyl, so it's nice and it's clean. And there's also no scratches on it. There's no pops. There's none of that artifact that happened over those years of listening to it. So when you're at that particular party and somebody was drunk and they knocked the turntable, you know, they scratched the record with the needle. Now that one song has that little blip in it that has become part of it for you. As I'm listening to this new pristine copy, I found myself missing that particular disc that I had, the one that had all those little fingerprints on it from all those experiences, you know. I wish I could have that one.
Yeah, back. It's definitely a moment in time, you know. Just certain things take you back to that moment. And even compact discs, when you would scratch them and you would have
to polish them out. Yeah. Hope for the best. Yeah. Well, let's get off the music thing. This is the point, we're about an hour and 15 minutes into this. This is the point where I want to ask you, as far as everything we've talked about so far, is there anything that we have missed that you would like to share with people? Is there anything that that you think is important that's relevant to your story that I might not have tried to pry out of you?
You know, I think we covered it all, but, you know, just expect bigger, better things out of Vanity Lace Photography.
Awesome.
You know,
good to hear.
Yeah, we're absolutely excited. We're getting ready for Halloween, and we're, you know, building. We actually shoot out of our home studio. So we're building our props, we're fabricating, we just have bigger, better ideas. Unfortunately, it seems like a lot of the photography studios in our area, for whatever reason, it seems like they've been closing down.
I think there is, as far as I can see, things have cooled off. There's been a bit of a slowdown, and I almost sort of feel like what we have is a situation where now that we're like pretty well past the pandemic, that a lot of things that people could not do that they put off, they're refocusing their time and their resources on some of those things, be it vacations, being going to huge concerts at exorbitant prices. Like, there's a lot of other things competing for people's money and time that they were cut off from for 2 years plus. And I'm pretty sure that that's part of it. You know, I've noticed it with submissions in general. Like, I can't complain, because I actually, as I look at other publications, I've seen quite a few that it feels like they've been pretty lean on as far as like their submissions, because their page counts are down. They're not as frequent. Like, it seems to me like just across the board, there's been a bit of a cooling off. But I'm not complaining. I'm still like I said, we'll still probably finish the year with like an issue a day. I think that's still going to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. But you know what? There's still people that love the art, and they put everything they have into their styling, their outfit, their theme. And so there's pinup models that live it, and they're totally invested in it. So
absolutely.
Yeah, it is sad to see that it's kind of cooling down and that studios have been closing. But for us, we're taking it as an opportunity to like just build bigger and better.
That's you definitely do have an opportunity. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Awesome. Well, listen, everybody, get to the links in this podcast. They'll take you to Vanity's page. She has issues available. She's going to be doing, she's going to sign some as well. You can actually get a signed personalized copy. There are posters you can get, which you should. And again, as we mentioned, this is something, you know, for a person like her, for a model like her, to actually get a bit of a reward. So we're asking you to pitch in and help out and pick up a copy. Get one as a gift for somebody else. You know, it's nothing shameful in that. I don't think this is the last you're gonna hear from her in this studio. I expect good things in the future as well. And I personally want to thank you for your support and taking this time today.
Thank you so much, Michael. It was a pleasure speaking with you.
Awesome. Well, we're gonna let you go, and for everybody else, get over there and start ordering. All right. Have a good night. Take care.